there. My name is Lance Pepler, and I'm the host, or have been the host, of the Business Bookshelf podcast. And I say have been the host because after 182 episodes or so, I've decided reluctantly to bring the podcast to an end. And so this will be the last episode of the Business Bookshelf podcast. And I've written down some notes and also a longer sort of document that I'll put on the website. If you want to read the whole thing in a more structured way, you can go to the businessbookshelfpodcast.com and look at the last blog on the website. And this particular podcast might be a bit rambly, but it'll just be broken up into three things. Firstly, the journey of the podcast. I'll go through that and tell you in the last 2 years where it's gone and how it's gone. I'll talk about some thoughts and benefits of the podcast to me, like how it's impacted me and my life. And lastly, if I were to start a podcast again, which I probably will be, I will do in the future, because I've loved having a podcast. There's two specific things that I would do differently, and I would tell anybody that is thinking of starting a podcast. So to start off with the Business Bookshelf podcast, it didn't actually start with that name. It started off by being called the Exponential Organizations Podcast. And at the time, I was thinking of and starting a business called Ideastorm. And Ideastorm had morphed into providing services and consulting around exponential growth and how to, you know, start divisions of organizations that grew exponentially. And so I started the podcast called Exponential Organizations to market my business. And a lot of podcasts start that way. And so that was the podcast. For the first 50 to 70 episodes, maybe less than 70 because I've interviewed a lot of authors, I interviewed people in the Exponential Organizations community. I was part of something called OpenEXO. And so I had a few solo episodes to begin with, and then I started to build connections and use the podcast for that. And it was really successful. I interviewed the founder of the organization, the chairman, the chief community officer, all sorts of people in the podcast. And that was great. I was really enjoying it. I was learning interview skills and all sorts of things like that. And then I started interviewing authors. And my first interview was a guy called Jeff Booth, and he's from Canada. And I interviewed him because he was quite prominent within OpenEXO was focusing on his book. And it was around, you know, the price of the future, about how debt was causing problems with the future generations, and, you know, all these different things and warning signs and exponential technology. Great book. And I was lucky to interview Jeff Booth himself. And this was around the middle of lockdown. And I found it fantastic, all these different interviews and Jeff itself, to be able to leave my office where I was battling to get Ideastorm started, to go across the world and make contact with somebody in Canada or the US or Europe or Australia, wherever they might have been. And that was fantastic for me. So the podcast started officially on the 14th of September 2019 until the 17th of May 2020. I was interviewing people around exponential growth, exponential organizations, and that sort of thing, which I really enjoyed. What I decided to do, though, because Ideastorm was straining and I realized that it probably wasn't going to work out, especially during COVID. And so the point of Exponential Organizations as a podcast was becoming less important because, you know, it was linked to my company and my company was looking like it wasn't going to work out. And so I decided that I really loved podcasting. As I said, I loved interacting with people overseas and people who are specialized in a particular subject, very intelligent people. And so what I did was I went onto Amazon and looked at the coming business books, you know, the newly released new releases and releases coming up, and thought, Wouldn't people, that would be an easy way of getting people onto the podcast because they wanted to market their book. It was coming up, wanted to get as much exposure as possible. And then, you know, so what Amazon featured on their upcoming books were some of the best books. There are thousands and thousands of books, business books as well, released every year. And so this was the cream of the crop. And the process I followed very successfully was I found the book. I went and found the author on LinkedIn and sent that link, the connect, author connects request saying, hey, I've got this podcast. And I did, you know, an overview of the podcast, all the episodes that I had done, people that I'd interviewed. And I would say 80%, maybe, you know, slightly less, something slightly more, agreed to be on the podcast. Sometimes I'd ask them to send me their book, which they did. And other times I would go onto Amazon and read the preview. So if you go onto Amazon, you can read the first couple of chapters. And so I'd read the first couple of chapters, I'd look at the index, and I would put my script together based on that. And that would give me an understanding of what the book essentially was about. And no author actually asked me if I'd read their book, especially, you know, at the beginning days. I was always waiting for someone to say, by the way, have you read my book? But that never happened, thank goodness. And so that was great. And what I found was that the level of guest actually increased. So my first big interview, I felt was big, and it was to me, was a man called John O'Leary, an absolutely fantastic man. He was badly disfigured and badly burnt when he was young, and to the point that they didn't think he was going to survive. He lost quite a few of his fingers. You know, bad scar damage, etc. And he was loved by his parents. He is a survivor. And not only that, he's a thriver. He's just succeeded unbelievably well. He got married. He's got, I think, 4 children, if I remember rightly. And very, very successful motivational speaker. He's written, you know, 3 or 4 books, maybe 3. I interviewed him in one of the books. And a YouTube channel with thousands of followers, a brilliant podcast that you can still listen to today. And so that was a big thing for me. John graciously said he would be on the podcast. I prepared the script, and he was such a lovely gut man to interview, so generous. And that was just the realize, this is wonderful. I'm getting access to this incredible individual. And that quickly followed by other amazing people. So I interviewed one of the leaders of the World Economic Forum, and that was fantastic. Who gets access to a leader of the World Economic Forum without going to Davos, which I'll never go to Davos probably? A leading professor, one of the top thinkers, she's in the Think 50, which features the, you know, the greatest thinkers and minds around the world. And that was followed swiftly by me interviewing a U.S. Navy submarine captain, or an ex-U.S. Navy submarine captain. It's amazing. And then an ex-Navy SEAL, which is incredible. He got badly damaged, or injured rather. And that was incredible to speak to him about how he had overcome his injuries and how he had prospered in life. And so once or twice a week, I went out of my room, out of my space, went across the world and interviewed these incredible individuals. And I always enjoyed it so much. And my interviews would, I tried to make the interviews light. And so I would laugh and have fun during the interviews. And often the person that I interviewed would say they had so much fun and they enjoyed being interviewed by me. And so some interviews were better than others, obviously. And sometimes I would come from the interview and think, oh, that went badly, especially if the internet wasn't 100%, and that would be a little bit disastrous. But others was just unbelievably cool. What also happened was that I started to reach out to book publishers, and not publishers themselves, but promoters, marketers. And I developed a relationship with 3 or 4 around the world because they have to get exposure for the book. And one of the ways they do that is they arrange interviews for their authors on podcasts. And seeing my podcast was called the Business Bookshelf Podcast, it was a good tie-in. And so they started to send me these overviews of the author. Said, like, do you want a PDF of the book? I would say yes, almost all the time. I think 9 out of 10 times I said yes to interview the author. And I would read the book, prepare the script, and send it off. Then the book promoter and themselves would schedule the interview, interview the guest, and that would be it. I think the whole thing I measured, you know, took about 6 hours of my time from start to finish. Maybe more if I read the book thoroughly. Often, unfortunately, I would skim read the book because I often joke with my wife that a book has often got one or two key thoughts. And once you've read the one or two key thoughts, then you know, you can read the rest, and those aren't breakthroughs and groundbreaking input. Occasionally, there would be a book that was just hundreds and hundreds of pages and just chock full or vital information, which I'm hoping now that I've got some time again, I'll be able to go back and reread some of these books. So in this lifetime of the podcast, now, as I said, I'm on 182 episodes. I think I've interviewed around 120 authors, which means I've read about 95 to 100 books, and that's in the last year and a half. And so my wife says I'm much more interesting now that I've read these books. It had the side effect as well, where last year I was employed by a company, and I would be a little bit of a pain in the ass because I would come up with all these great suggestions based on the books that I've written. I imagine they would roll their eyes and say, yes, Lance, great idea. And I think all of them were great ideas. If people could just be humble enough to accept some of these ideas, that, you know, they would have an effect. And hopefully in future, when I start another company one day, I could use these ideas in this company that I set up, and also the company that I'm working now. I just have to be more gentle and more tactful and space out my obviously really important contributions to the company. Okay, so that was the podcast. I don't know when it renamed officially to the Business Bookshelf Podcast, but it was probably around the middle of 2019, and that's how it's remained till today. Now, some of the journey with the podcast as well, and what I've learned and valued, is that it actually has been more valuable to me than the author, and probably the listeners as well. And I'll talk to you a little bit about that, because it allowed me to hone my interview skills, become a better speaker, give exposure to all these ideas, exposure to these unbelievably interesting people. And so that's been vital for me. And my actual company, and there are different metrics for a podcast. The one is, you know, downloads and listeners. And I was always trying to find ways of increasing the downloads and listeners. And in a way, it's kind of disappointing because I was always thinking that the next author, and some of these authors had communities of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. And I always thought, surely this author is going to promote the book. People are going to listen to it, and it's going to become viral. And then I'll be the next Tim Ferriss, or, you know, one of those How I Built This with Guy Raz, and I would break into the top echelon of podcasts, and it'll be, you know, wonderful. And that unfortunately never happened. And I kind of know why, and that's what I'll share at the end of the podcast, just to, if you're thinking of starting a podcast, you might find this beneficial at the end. The other thing that gets a lot of attention, apart from promoting it, is monetization. And I would have loved the podcast to be one of the revenue streams of IdeaStorm, if not maybe even the main revenue streams, because potentially you can make a lot of money from podcasting. And if you've got a company, you really want to have as many revenue streams as possible. Now, that unfortunately, again, never happened. And the reason for that is because in order to get advertising on your podcast, which a lot of podcasts do if you listen to them, you need thousands and thousands and thousands of podcast downloads a week. And I was only ever managed to get 400 or 500 a week. And that's not nearly enough to get any kind of reasonable income, you know, from advertising on your podcast. I was always looking as well for tie-ins, revenue tie-ins. And so One of the things that I try to investigate is getting people to pay to be on the podcast, like an author would pay $50 or $100 to be on the podcast. But people, you know, people don't pay to be on a podcast. They see it as a service to the actual podcast and the podcast host by being on the podcast. And so that's not easy to do. Then I started to think of other ways of doing ventures that related to the podcast. The first one I thought was, because I've interviewed 110 or so authors, a lot of these authors had their own boutique consultancies. And because one of the ways that you market and get, you know, promote your business is to write a book and then to be on podcasts, but particularly to write a book. So I was starting to have relationships and build relationships with these CEOs and owners of companies. And I thought maybe I can set up a marketplace and got 110 different people from boutique consultancies and they specialize in innovation and leadership and communication and humility and culture and all these really important things for businesses. And so if a business went onto this marketplace, they could find exactly what they were looking for. And then obviously I would get a finder's fee, or I would charge the consultants and companies to be on the marketplace. Now, that obviously is incredibly difficult to do. And not only that, but there's a lot of these different marketplaces around in the world. So I didn't have the ability to do that, let's just say. So that didn't work. Then I thought maybe I could do an event. And people would pay $10 or $20 to attend the event. So I would get four authors from different areas of business to come and talk about their books and about what their unique thinking is around the book and what they can provide. And people would pay, because some of the people that I interviewed, as I said, they're very well known. And maybe that could have worked if I'd done it. But once again, I didn't get around to doing it. And then the last thing I tried to do to monetize the podcast was I saw that the old ways of launching your podcast, your book, wasn't working anymore during COVID. So before COVID, you would do a book tour and you'd go from city to city and you would do book signings and you would speak at universities and you would promote your book that way. And so if I could position a service where I would provide a really well done event, I would bring people to the event. I would be the MC because I've got a good understanding of business. I'd read their book. I had honed my interview skills. And so I could provide that service for X amount of dollars. And once again, up to now, maybe in the future it could still work, but it hasn't up to now. So the promoting your podcast is almost a full-time job. And the monetization of your podcast is a huge endeavor. And I'm not saying it was a burden for me, because I enjoyed it. And I enjoyed reading about podcasts, listening to podcasts about podcasts, and to always try and change the podcast to get a better introduction and put the theme music at the beginning and theme music slightly after the introduction and hone ways of getting buy-in and getting people to listen all the way through. So, yeah, and I'll miss that aspect of my life, really, until maybe one day I'll start another one. So the last section now is, if I did start another one, when I start another one, these are the two things, and this is the advice I would give anyone starting a podcast, is know specifically who your listener profile is, or your ideal listener profile. And it ties into point two, but I'll get to that now, that if you can identify exactly who your target market is, then obviously you can move and shape your podcast around that particular listener. And because podcasts can have exposure to a global audience, you don't have to worry and think that your particular niche, which I'll get to now, or your listener is quite obscure. Because even if it is obscure, you will have thousands of people who fit into that particular segment. And I've heard of podcasts that specialize in gin or brandy or a particular computer game or movie genre or whatever the story is. And they get thousands and thousands of downloads because that target market has still got 500,000 people that specialize in that particular area. And often those 500,000 people are quite passionate about horror films or whatever. And so they will listen to a podcast about horror films. And so that's, unfortunately, with the Business Bookshelf podcast, I was too broad. I didn't know who the listener was, because the listener could be someone who's interested in innovation or interested in leadership or interested in creativity or how to implement a good culture or even negotiation skills and all these type of things. And every week, the Business Bookshelf would have a different author about a different book. And I'll tell you how that affected the downloads as well in a moment. But this was problematic. And so, you know, if you're going to start a podcast, focus on leadership or focus on whatever. And then and focus on leaders, whether it's young leaders or mature leaders or people who are interested in doing design thinking or whatever the story is. The second thing is niche down as much as possible and have a specific focus. And that's got to, you know, obviously tied into the first one. But once again, from the Business Bookshelf podcast, it was too broad, you know. And I lost listeners, I think, on a constant basis. So an author would come on and talk about his book on, let's say, leadership, which was by far the most common category of business that I interviewed people about. And so that particular author would put it on their community or mailing list, and then I'd get, let's say, 50 downloads for that episode, new listeners. But the problem is that it's kind of a fact. If you're a listener of podcasts, you know that you've only got space really for 6 or 7 podcasts that you listen to. And you've got to pretty much listen to them on a weekly basis. If you start to find that you're not downloading an episode in 3 to 4 to 5 weeks, very, very soon that podcast is going to be deleted. And I've done that. And so there's 5 or 6 podcasts that have been on my, you know, regulars for very, very long time. And that is because I download them almost every week and listen to them almost every week. And every now and again, there's one that comes on, new one that I find, and that becomes a regular too. And if there's more than 7, then one has to fall away to incorporate this new one. So that's the story there. You might say, but there are podcasts out there that are very generic and very general. And Tim Ferriss is, you know, one of the most popular downloads in the world and podcasts in the world. And he interviews a different person every week about a different thing. But he's got an underlying theme and focus every single time during his podcasts. And if you say, like, what is the Tim Ferriss theme? Well, he says he deconstructs world-class performers to extract the tactics, tools, and routines you can use. And that's what he wants. And that's what the listener wants as well. So you listen to this person, you say, oh, that's how they do it. I can incorporate that into my life. I can incorporate that business tactic, that exercise area into my life, that diet tip or whatever. And so that is his niche. And fortunately for him, it's a broad niche and he gets millions of downloads. And obviously he does a lot of research and he's really good and mastered his craft. Another one, like How I Built This by Guy Raz, where you can interview someone who has built a toy company from scratch or telco from scratch or whatever. But his niche then would be entrepreneurs and business leaders who want to grow and strengthen their business. So they can get a tip or they can get some insights into a business leader, regardless of which business they're in. So yeah, so those are the two things that I would do. Like, an ideal listener profile, and then focus on niche, specific focus. And I say that if someone, like my old business was doing a podcast and that I worked for last year, and I said to the marketing person, this is what you need to do. You know, you need to find, are you going to interview, do a podcast for technical people or business leaders? What is your ideal customer profile? Because if you don't have that, they won't listen to your podcast. It's as simple as that. So there we go. So I want to end this episode, the last episode, as I said, by just thanking you. If you've you know, listen to this whole thing, it's 25 minutes or so at the moment, I want to thank you so much for going on this journey with me. Maybe you're one of the regulars that have listened to dozens and dozens of episodes. Thank you. And I hope you found value from it. I hope you found enjoyment from it. I've tried to make the interviews light and entertaining as well as informative. And so I hope you've laughed occasionally during my interviews. I've tried to make them funny. Really enjoy yourselves. Replace my podcast with something good. Don't just leave it because podcasts are so valuable and important. I love them. They're my university, really. And so enough waffling. So thank you very much and stay well. And thank you so much. Okay, bye.